Paul's here, but he's not making any sounds yet. Welcome to episode 140. That's 140 episodes of the Talk to Contact podcast. I'm Erolf Pleiss, back after a one-week hiatus, and with me once again is my twin brother Paul, the baseball pirate, all the way from the Oakland side of the San Francisco Bay, and Jay _Corn from the shores of Lake Minnetonka. Paul, you've recently moved to Oakland, and I want to know, why is it there in Oakland Bay?
Well, because it's San Francisco Bay.
Is there like another bay nearby?
Well,
like, is there no better identifier?
The San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge makes it sound like there's an Oakland Bay, because it's often just called the Oakland Bay Bridge, but it's actually spanning the San Francisco Bay. But I would assume it's just largely related to the fact that San Francisco was the first and bigger brother of the two cities. And there's Oakland Harbor, there's Inner Oakland Harbor, but there's no Oakland Bay.
And who is San Francisco?
What?
Who is San Francisco?
Who is San Francisco? St. Francisco?
What? Sure.
He's, related to, I believe the translation is a whale's vagina.
No, that's San Diego.
Oh, I clearly have things confused then.
So you have no idea.
Well, St. Francisco, I believe, was named after St. Francis of Assisi, the great Catholic saint, who did not drive any snakes out of Ireland like old St. Patrick, but I think he did do something with animals, but I'm not really sure. Or it could be a totally different St. Francis. It's hard to say.
Hard to say, or you just don't know. I'm sure this is a thing you'll learn eventually.
Nope.
Well, who's Oakland then? What is Oakland? Do you know that, since that's your town of residence?
Oakland is where all the hipsters go now that San Francisco has become too hip.
So that's why you're living there.
Obviously, I'm trying to get out in front of it, you know.
You were living in Oakland before it was cool.
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, you know, I'm here before the gentrification.
You're the leading edge of gentrification.
I'm sure people tell you
that all the time.
Pretty much.
So, Paul, you're now in Oakland. The Twins were just in Oakland.
They were.
And you had a chance to attend the 14-1 game? Or whatever that game was?
I did, yeah. 14-1. 13-run shellacking. Was bound to be a shutout there until the Twins put up a run at the end of the game. But, man, it was hot. We sat in the front row behind a couple sections off of the Twins' dugout, just sitting in the sun. And, man, things just got ugly in a hurry, and they just kept getting worse. There was quite a few Twins fans out of the game on Sunday, though, much better than the turnout for the Friday evening game, which turned out to be the only game of the series that the Twins were able to steal a W.
And was this your first Oco experience?
Negative.
So what do we need to know about Oco other than it fills up with garbage water every once in a while?
That's really only in the dugouts, and I don't think any of you guys have that kind of skill to be in there, so you should be all right. The main thing, it reminds me of, I guess maybe I would say, the cellular field in Chicago, in that there's a lot of cement. When you're on the concourse, you can't see the field. So it's kind of dome-like in that respect, except it's open air. It's the last, I believe, dual-use facility left in Major League Baseball, so it's also the home of the Oakland Raiders. But contrary to popular belief, you will not be murdered for being a fan of the opposing team during an Oakland Athletics game.
Now they
they
are getting a new stadium, correct? Didn't we have a whole big drama? They were going to move to San Jose, and then the voters passed.
The A's just signed a new 10-year lease for the O.co Coliseum to stay there for the next 10 years. That lease does have a lot of out clauses, so that if they are get some way to get a new stadium, whether the Giants release the rights, so I guess the territory rights over San Jose, more Oakland and Alameda County put together some sort of deal to build a new stadium, that remains to be seen. They did sign a 10-year lease to stay at O.co, at least for the time being.
Staying with Oakland quick before we get back to the Twins, they kind of broke the ice today and dealt Kazmir. I'm sure we'll get to it later. They dealt him to the Astros, but I think you're going to start seeing some dominoes falling. What's the general feeling out there in Oakland in the few hours since Kazmir's been dealt?
Well, I just got back from walking my dog through the heart of Oakland right before this podcast, and I did see a lot of people wearing Oakland Athletics paraphernalia. And my general feeling from having been to a couple of games now is that the Oakland fans are passionate about their team in the same way that I would say Cleveland Indians fans are passionate about their team. The fans that are there, they're baseball fans. They love baseball. They know their guys. But I don't know that it's really that big in Oakland at large. I think you get a lot of people coming in from the suburbs, more so than the people that live in the metropolitan area.
Interesting.
Very cool. Well, let's talk some more Twins baseball. So the Twins were in Oakland. They won the first game. They lost the next two. Then they headed up the coast, down the coast?
Down
the coast to Anaheim, to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And they promptly got throttled, I would say, continuing bad baseball in the first two games against the Angels.
Let's note here that the Angels are probably the hottest team after the All-Star break. I think they had a great series before the Twins arrived. They opened the second half at home. Trout and Pujols were both hot. They played the Cardinals, I think, and Pujols homered like twice in one day, or three times in one day during a doubleheader. So the Twins did come into a bit of a buzzsaw, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, so the Twins went there, but they just looked bad. I mean, it wasn't even like they got down early and they stayed down, and it was like not exciting ever. So I think ever since they got behind in Oakland in that third game, when it looked like if they could have picked up a win there, it would have been a nice series coming off of the All-Star break, carry some momentum. And they lose 2 out of 3 in Anaheim. They did win the day game today. Now they're coming back home to face the Yankees. And I don't know. I think the Twins should win this series, which would put them, they'd be 4-5 in 9 games after the All-Star game break, which is not terrible.
Why do you think the Twins should win this series?
Because I don't think that the Yankees are better than the Twins.
Oh, I beg to differ.
I think they're both pretty marginal ball clubs, and the Twins are at home.
Well, they've got to face Pineda, who has the ability on any given night to be absolutely lights out, has great stuff, or he might put up a clunker. And he's facing off Phil Hughes, who has consistently gone out almost every inning or every outing this season and given up 3 or 4 runs. And the Twins' offense has not been scoring a lot of runs of late, so I would be a little bit hesitant to say that they win that first game. In the second game, they get CC Sabathia to go with the reduced waistline and an inflated ERA with Tommy Malone on the mound, who was a big part of surrendering many of those runs in that 14-1 game out in Oakland. So we'll see how Tommy Malone responds to that bad outing. See if he can hop back and get on that good streak. I think in his previous 3 starts before Oakland, he'd only given up 2 home runs, and he gave up 2 home runs in that shortened outing in Oakland. And then to finish up that series, they've got Nathan Eovaldi from the Yankees against Kyle Gibson. Kyle Gibson, a name that we've heard a lot in trade rumors, I think, in the last week and a half. So I definitely like Gibson there. So maybe there's a chance for the Twins to take 2 out of 3, but I don't know that I would say that I would feel confident with the way that they've played since the break.
You're worried about CC Sabathia?
No, I'm not worried about CC Sabathia. I'm worried about Ellsbury and Gardner at the top of the lineup, followed by A-Rod and Teixeira and McCann. That's what I'm worried about.
Eric, just what I'm worried about is the offense in general, no matter who's on the mound for the opposing team. I mean, the issue is not can this Twins team win. Now, the pitchers are facing a good deal. CC Sabathia is not having a good year, hasn't had a good year for a couple of years, but the Twins offense, if they don't score runs, which they really haven't done since the twisted his ankle taking batting practice or first base practice, that it's just, I don't feel confident with the way that they're swinging the bats right now.
Well, Sano's back today, and the offense comes out, scores three early runs, and the pitching pitches a shutout against that same Angels lineup that has been just shelling them, you know, for earlier in the week. So, I mean,
I do. Yeah, they did get a 3-run homer from Plouf, so it was on one swing of the bat. It wasn't like they were manufacturing runs. Although I will say that the story of this game to me was Ervin Santana pitching against his former team. It was actually the first game he's pitched in Anaheim since he left there a few years ago, and he was absolutely dominant. He struck out Trout twice in 6 pitches. I think he might have even got him a third time. Didn't really give up a whole heck of a lot. A couple singles, I think. Actually, on the first pitch of the game, he gives up a single and then retired like 18 straight. But so Ervin Santana looked like an ace today. It was, avoided the sweep on a getaway day. So that's a much better plane ride home coming back to face the Yankees. So I really want to highlight Ervin Santana's effort today because he was absolutely dominant against a tough, tough Angel team.
Yeah, eight innings of, you know, 4-hit baseball, you know, 7 strikeouts. I think I saw Brandon Warren tweeted something like he threw 17 sliders today and had 14 swings and misses on those pitches or something like that. So, I mean, he was just definitely on his game and pitched very well, which is, you know, a good sign because he's been a little bit up and down since he's come back from that suspension. So you like to see that and know that the Twins can kind of stop the bleeding a little bit, you know. I think when I was looking at the 6-game stretch with the Angels and the Yankees, I said, I don't think there's a way that the Twins come out of this 6-game stretch with more than 3 wins, right? I assume they're going to get 1 from the Angels and then find a way to win 2 out of 3 at home against the Yankees. So I think they're still on pace to do that. And if you can win the Yankees series and, you know, again, now you're just 4-5 in your 10 games and Twins are playing 500 baseball essentially, then that's pretty much what I'm going to expect from them. You know, battle with the good teams and, you know, beat some of the bad teams when you have a chance. That's why I think the Oakland series was so frustrating for me because they had that second game won, right? I mean, that was a bullpen implosion, and then Sunday it was just
well, I don't know if it was, I don't know if you could call it an implosion, but they definitely they came back in the top of the ninth to take the lead there and looked like they were on their way. And then Glenn Perkins, very uncharacteristically with his first blown save of the season.
And by the way, that was
a tough loss. And I wonder if there wasn't a little bit of hangover effect going from that game into the next day on that 14-1 shellacking.
You know, that Perkins blown save, he got the first 2 outs on like 8 pitches, got 2 quick outs. And then it was like, a bloop or a walk and a stolen base and then a single and that was it. I mean, it wasn't like
yeah. And that blocked. the wild pitch really hurt him. And then that steal of third base by Billy Burns just really killed things.
But Perkins did look good. I mean, he blew the save. But I think that's just baseball, and we're gonna just chalk that up to the way it goes sometimes. He got out there today, he saved the game for Santana. It was his first time since that game. I was actually, were you guys surprised at all that Molitor did not let Santana go out there for the complete game shutout? I kind of disagree with him because he was dominant. His pitch count was under 100. It was against his former team. You're heading on the road. I know you want to get Perkins back in the saddle and everything, but I'd send Santana out there for the complete game shutout.
Well, I mean, he had thrown a lot of pitches. Right, and I think
less than 100 in 8 innings.
I think, but he was struggling, you know, later in the game, and they had a bullpen that could go out there and do it. I mean, there's no reason to send him back out there in a 3-0 game. I mean, what do you need a shutout for, or you know, a complete game for? Why do you need to do that? I guess it doesn't hold any special value to me to send the guy back out there. right? You want to get Glenn Perkins back on the horse, give him an opportunity to have another save. And you know, he picked up his 29th save of the year today. So, you know, I like it.
Hello?
Nothing?
What the hell?
Paulie?
I'll drop him.
Yeah, no, I just have no comment.
Oh, good. You're still here, yeah.
I was looking up how many pitches that Ervin Santana made in the 7th and 8th inning. As you argued that he was struggling late, but he had a 1-2-3-8, and other than hitting Matt Joyce in the 7th, had a clean inning there too. So I was mostly just looking for some statistics to call bullshit.
Oh, well, I thought he had, you know, given up those hits later in the game. I don't know. I was listening at the office, and it was a hectic afternoon, so I was tuning in and out.
Paul, do you agree with the decision to put Perkins in there, or do you send Santana out there for the complete game?
I love complete games, but I think that Perkins is your best option there. Perkins, despite being a lefty coming in, you know, he's going to face two tough righties right there. Righties, I think, are hitting like .150 off Perkins this season, so I don't have a problem with that decision. I think there's an argument to be made that you let Santana go out there and go for that complete game shutout. I mean, you want your guy to get those stats, get his numbers, for whatever that's worth, but I had no problem sending Perkins out there. He's your closer. That's what he's on the team. That's the role that's set up for him. And so that's what we've seen from Molly this season. So it was not unexpected, and I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay, moving on.
All right. Well, it's kind of it's trade season, and we kind of alluded to that earlier when we were talking about Gibson's name floating around there. And what we've been seeing is the Twins are looking to address whatever their needs are and be potentially look to solidify themselves as a postseason contender. You know, I've kind of been of the mind that what the Twins are doing this year is a bonus, right? I mean, we didn't expect them to be good. I think realistically, the Twins front office didn't expect them to be this good. Right, so they came out after that disastrous start and then played really, really good baseball up through the All-Star break and, you know, banked those wins. And so they're in a good place and they're in a position where playing .500 baseball will get them very close to, you know, certainly one of those wild card spots. But I don't know. I don't think that this is the time when the Twins need to sell pieces off. I still think they're a year away from having Berrios up with this team. You know, they're going to have Buxton and Sano deep in and ready to go. And then you can start looking at next year, what are some pieces you can move and move forward to kind of make this team work. I think you just enjoy this year. You get what you can. Maybe you make a marginal move for a bullpen arm or something and, you know, go from there. But I don't think that, I mean, the Twins' two big holes are catcher and shortstop, right? And the shortstop hole is made bigger because the Twins like to put Danny Santana out there and see what he can do flailing away at shortstop instead of running at Eduardo Escobar out there, who's, you know, a free option and a free upgrade to your shortstop position. And then the Twins have, you know, at catcher, they have Kurt Suzuki, who's having well below average year this year, and they've been supplementing Kurt Suzuki with Chris Herman and now Eric Fryer. So not necessarily a great set of players at either position. And what we're seeing in the media, at least, is the Twins are looking to, you know, do they improve at catcher? Do they improve at shortstop? I don't know. Matthew Lucroy from the Brewers is a name that has been floating around, but the Twins would have to give up, you know, an arm and a leg and part of their torso to get him.
Lucroy is a real possibility because the Brewers have said that they're not trading Lucroy. So I think you'd have to give up too much to get Lucroy, who's on a very team-friendly deal for the next 2.5 seasons, I believe. So I just don't see that happening. That's a pipe dream.
He's a two-way catcher, right? So that's not a thing that exists in baseball. It's very rare to find that. I mean, Joe Mauer was that for a time period. You know, Buster Posey is that, but, you know, there's not those guys out there. And when you're a full-time catcher, you can age pretty quickly. So there's, you know, some danger in overpaying for that. And then what do you get, a couple more years and he goes in the tank? I don't know. I mean, that's the risk there, and you have to overpay to make it happen.
All right, well, forget Lucroy. What about Zunino from Seattle? Falling out of favor a little bit. Paul, you kind of got the inside scoop.
Mike, Zunino is not going anywhere. I think that the biggest issue with Zunino is that he was promoted too quickly through their system because there was no catching depth in that system at all. The Mariners believe in Zunino. They're not looking to replace him. They're looking to get someone to supplement him so they can, you know, pinch hit for him later in a game. They like his defense. They like what's going forward. He's hitting so far below the Mendoza line that for that team to really try to turn things around, if they think there's still a chance, they need to find someone else that can spell Zunino a couple days a week or be a replacement late in the game when they need a bat to come in. I don't think there's any chance that he's moving.
What about Fagley from Oakland?
No, I think that if you want to talk about who's a realistic option, who is it? Colorado's got a couple of catchers on their roster.
Huntley. I don't think, what is it, Castillo or whoever that guy is, that I don't think they're going to give him up. I think they'd give up other guys before him, but I could be wrong.
Well, they also have Hundley, I believe, is Nick Hundley.
Right.
Who was their catcher last season, had some offensive ability, and then got supplanted this season. And so I don't know. I feel like that could be a realistic trade target for them. And then you look out at Toronto with the signing of Russell Martin. Their catcher became available. He hasn't been hitting that well as their everyday DH this season. But, yes. So that's another option out there.
There are catchers out there. I mean, if the I'll partially disagree with Eric, is that I just don't think catcher is a glaring hole, at least defensively. I mean, we could of course upgrade, but before we start talking about what catchers are available, I mean this shortstop situation, if they're really going to be a contender, if they're really going to make a run for it, this has to be settled. I understand sticking with the young player and letting them learn on the job, but Santana's overmatched. He's making way too many errors. There was a play last night where him and Dozier just about collided. It probably was Dozier's ball, but it just looked bad. Santana's become a real liability.
The thing about shortstop is, yes, there's definitely a hole there, but I think the Twins could do themselves a big favor and stop playing Danny Santana every day. Let Eduardo Escobar be your everyday shortstop. Stop trying to get him at bats in left field. And let him play the everyday shortstop, and you're going to see an improvement defensively and a little bit of improvement offensively, and it's not that big jump, that big move that everyone wants, like maybe trying to go out and make a deal for Troy Tulowitzki, who the Twins have been linked to lately. But I think that can be a small upgrade. I think the upgrade at catcher, the defensive liability from Kurt Suzuka, we all know he's not a great guy at holding base runners or throwing out base runners. But on that Saturday game we talked about earlier, when Perkins blew that save, he threw a fastball in the dirt, and you can't expect any catcher to block that. Well, I disagree. Yeah, it was a bad ball in the dirt, but that was right into the teeth of Suzuki's weakness, not being able to block that ball, and then having the guy steal third base later in that next at bat. I mean, that Kurt Suzuki cost them a run there. Maybe he's, you know, a better catcher, can either make that stop, prevent that run from coming in, or can get that guy at third base. So I definitely, as much as I love Kurt Suzuki, he's one of my favorite guys on the team right now, despite his struggles on the field and offensively. But I think that could definitely be a great upgrade for them. And so for me, I think that's probably where you'd see the most impact. I just don't know that there's guys available that are going to be able to provide an impact either defensively and offensively. You're going to have to choose one or the other.
So, I mean, what do you guys think, just philosophically, is this Twins team in a position to be buyers, or are you okay just riding out, seeing what happens? I mean, if you're Terry Ryan and you're holding the cards right now, what are you doing?
To be honest, and I've given this a lot of thought, Eric, over the last week since the last podcast, I think what we're seeing out of the Twins right now is far more than anybody could have hoped for or expected before the beginning of the season. So this, to me...
Except for our own Jay Corner.
Except for our own Jay Corner.
Jay, the 85 wins, I think those are pretty much in the bag right now.
That's right. But in all seriousness, I mean, 2015 is already a success. I mean, whether they make the playoffs, that would be great if they could sneak a wild card berth, but I think 2015 is already a success. And while I would give up Berrios and Pelfrey plus another prospect for Tulowitzki, short of a blockbuster like that, I'd be content with a minor deal or two or standing pat. And I think that's, I'm hoping that's the way Terry Ryan feels, to answer your question.
Paul, what are your thoughts?
I think that all the moves that you should be making this season should be internal moves. I think there's just, if you need a bat, you can go bring back Oswaldo Arcia. If you need a pitching, you can look at bringing up Jose Berrios, put Trevor May back in the rotation.
Pat Dean, right? He's had a nice season.
I just don't think that you need to stretch, because I think the Twins are overperforming a little bit. They're performing a little bit ahead of schedule. Although I do love what's happening in Houston. I mean, they're definitely ahead of schedule. They got young guys coming up. Everybody's gelling, and they're going for it. I mean, they make that move. They gave a couple of guys in A-ball to bring in a dominant left-hander in Scott Kazmir. That's a fantastic deal.
Where was Terry Ryan on this Scott Kazmir deal? Because I think we could outbid Houston for Kazmir today.
I would love to see the Twins, if they're going to go out there, if they really think that they're going to try to fall in, they need to get a front of the rotation arm, because I don't know how they're going to get it done.
I mean, adding a front of the rotation arm isn't something I think that the Twins can do or would be willing to do right now. I mean, I think they're okay with what their pitching staff has right now. They're okay with, you know, some of the arms that they have in AAA. I mean, Berrios is a guy that can come up, you know, at any time, and they have some other guys. Pat Dean has been up. Tyler Duffy's now up in AAA. They can make those. If there are a rash of injuries, I still think they're okay and in a good place.
I agree that they don't need to. They've got the guys, but if they really do envision themselves contenders, they need someone. Because who's a playoff rotation right now? Gibson, Pelfrey, and I mean, Gibson, Pelfrey, Hughes. Are those your three? Mike Pelfrey in a playoff rotation? That's like putting Nick Blackburn in a playoff rotation. You're asking for failure. I mean, they don't have horses. They don't have those front of the rotation guys. And so if they really think themselves contenders, they need to go out and find a way to bring in a top of the rotation arm.
Well, I mean, it could be possibly Nolasco could be in that mix. May could be in that mix. Who knows? I don't see Pelfrey, to be honest with you, making it to the end of the season in his current role. But the pitching's in demand. That's why this deal for Kazmir today really blew me away, because I felt like that asking price was super low, that a lot of other teams could have offered better. The Astros were just sneaky good here, I think, more than anything else.
Well, it's not like they're giving up nobodies there. I mean, the prospects they gave up, they are far away.
There are a pair of single-A prospects that, you know, are several years away that nobody's ever...
Oh, Cole Stewart's down in single-A. Do you want to give up Cole Stewart?
If we could trade Cole Stewart for Scott Kazmir straight up today, I would do it. Yes.
Yeah, unfortunately, that book has closed. The door is shut on Kazmir. But I don't know. I'm not saying that the Twins should go out and make a move for a front of the rotation guy, but if the front office really does believe that they're contenders, then I think that's the move that they need. That's what they need to address more than anything. Yes, shortstop play for the Twins has been atrocious this season. They're not getting nearly enough from their catching position. They could probably look at upgrading their bullpen, but I think that could be an internal thing. But I think if you really want to compete in a postseason, you need to have better starting pitching than the Twins have on their roster, because Mike Pelfrey is not going to continue to pitch way over his head. Kyle Gibson may be one of those three guys that you can count on. Maybe you bring Trevor May back into the rotation. And I don't trust the Phil Hughes that we've seen for the first almost two-thirds of this season. So I don't know who that third guy would be. And the Twins, they need that other arm at the front of the rotation if they really want to compete.
Well, I mean, and they still got Tommy Malone. I mean, he has been up and down, and this Oakland start, his last time out, was a disaster. But he, since his demotion to AAA, has turned in some pretty nice starts for the Twins and kind of...
Oh, yeah, you're right. How could I overlook thinking about putting Tommy Malone in a playoff rotation? You're right. That seals the deal, Eric. That's the
front of the rotation. Doesn't that sound a lot better than Mike Pelfrey?
Ooh, Tommy Malone. Now we're cooking with fire.
You know, and if Berrios is a guy that comes up in late August, then...
Play right now. He's going to be pushing up against some kind of innings limit for him, so... I think expecting him to come up and do wonders is also a bit of a reach. Let him figure out AAA before you bring him up here.
I mean, the guy can pitch.
To Paul's point, to both your points, I just don't think that the Twins have a realistic shot at either an ace, like David Price, for example, or even a bit player like some of these guys they have down in Miami or out in Tampa. I think it's going to be internal. There's going to be an internal development, whatever that is. Somebody steps up, somebody goes on a hot streak, somebody gets hurt, something. I just think it's going to be an internal problem solve rather than going out there this year looking for the big splash on the as far as an arm.
Well, I mean, you talked about guys in Miami. I wouldn't mind the Twins going out and picking up Dan Herron. He's not a front of the rotation guy by any means.
You could have Dan Herron probably tomorrow. If you want Dan Herron, we can go out and get you Dan Herron.
I mean, that's a guy that at least brings in, get a little bit more experience in that. I don't know that he's any better than Phil Hughes, but at least he's pitched quite well in the National League this season. And so that's a guy that maybe you go out there and bring him in. At least you got another quality arm, knowing that Urban Santana is not going with you into the playoffs should you make it that far.
You know who I like, and I know this might sound a little weird, Colby Lewis from Texas. I think you could get him. He's got a good story. I think he would fit well for, I think he's under control next year too. If I looked him up earlier this week, I like Colby Lewis out of Texas. If the Twins could grab him, that'd be the kind of guy though, Paul, that I think you'd be looking at.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen Lewis's name floated around there. I mean, they maybe could, but he's a guy that, again, would slot in at the back of your rotation, right? I mean, he's not that exciting of a guy. And what would you have to give up? Yeah, I don't know, probably not a ton, but certainly a guy that we've heard of, right? And a guy that we would feel a little bit of pain giving up, right? Knowing what we know about the Twins' prospects in the system, but... I'm fine with the internal candidates and riding it out. So let's see what happens. Find a bullpen arm. Do something, but don't deal major pieces to get major pieces. Certainly not a major piece that could only be with you for a year or so. Don't do a rental. I don't want to see another, Matt Capps scenario unfolding.
And you know what? The American League is just too strong this year. I mean, I just honestly don't think that the Twins are better than the Royals. Or even the Yankees, really. So I don't think that this is a World Series year. You can kind of just see the way it's shaken out. I mean, and I know that goes against Jay Korn's usual procrastinate, but it's not. I just don't see it happening this year. Playoffs, maybe.
All right. So that's our trade segment here. Let's dive into a little bit more of what's happening on the field. So Brian Dozier got the day off today. Was still trying to get into the game, though. Is this a second half slump for Dozier, or is this just a case of the Twins' bats all going quiet at the same time? They say hitting's contagious, whether it's good hitting or bad hitting.
What's concerned me a lot about Dozier since the All-Star break is the number of swings and misses, the numbers of strikeouts, the bad at-bats, swinging at balls out of the zone, arguing with umpires, complaining about calls, very un-Dozier-like. I'm gonna call it here. I think he's in a slump.
Paul, what do you got? What are your thoughts on Dozier here?
Well, I don't know that I would really be ready to call it a slump, at least not yet. I mean, what are we looking at in the last 7 days? Since the All-Star break, Brian Dozier is hitting .256, .326, .510.
He's hitting .200, though, essentially in July.
Okay, well, I don't know. I have nothing. I don't know that you need to call it a slump because it is such a short period of time so far. So I don't. I guess that's where I'm going with this is. I'm not ready to call it a slump over such a short period of time.
Yeah. So, just looking at July, so he's hitting .203. He's got 18 strikeouts and 77 plate appearances to go along with just 5 walks. He's still hitting home runs. He's got 4 home runs this month. The RBIs are there. The runs scored are there. That's some of the benefit of being at the top of the lineup, but certainly, he doesn't look, and Dozier's not ever going to be a high average guy, right? We haven't seen that. You know, he's going to hit 240 or 250, something like that, 260,
but he should not be
200.
Guy. He should be a high on base guy. He takes walks, you know, gets hit by a couple pitches.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like, since the break, I think I'm quoted some wrong numbers, but he's 250, 286, 450 since the All-Star game. So that on-base percentage is lower than you like, especially for a guy in your leadoff spot. But again, it's only five games. So let's cool the jets. And if we're still talking about Brian Dozier being in the doghouse in a week, then maybe I'm ready to say, you know, pull that S word out of the back of my trunk and slap it on Dozier's back. But let's hold the horses there.
Well, and Dozier has never had a good July in his career. So he hasn't ever had a WRC plus above average, you know, above 100 in his, you know, three seasons of big league ball. But the last couple of years, he's had very strong Augusts. So, I mean, it could be just, you know, a little bit of a grind, and he's going to come back and be ready to go. So we'll see what happens. But the last 2 years, particularly, he's had really, really good Augusts, and kind of expect him to get hot at some point. I mean, he's not as bad as he has been in July, and he's been a streaky player, right? I think we've seen that. We talked, you know, when he kind of first burst on the scene, it was hot for a half a season, then cold, then hot, and he's leveled out a little bit and been, you know, certainly good, but, you know, he has been shown that he can be streaky. So maybe we're just seeing some of that, and they'll get it together. The Twins will get the dance party mobile fired back up back home in Target Field, and all will be right in the world.
He's made a couple errors in the field, too. He hasn't looked anywhere near as sharp as he has this year. That play with Santana that I was mentioning, I think he even got charged with another error or two, even just in the Oakland series. Little bit of concern. I am concerned about Dozier, but we'll go with Paul's words of caution and hold off a week or two before we doomsay anymore.
All right. So Byron Buxton has now been on the DL for a while, and it sounds like he's starting to do more and more baseball activities. And while his return is not yet imminent, I mean, I think the Twins have, you know, been cruising with, you know, Rosario and Hicks and Hunter, and, you know, Robinson's getting some starts here and there. This is a team that kind of has their outfield put together, and it's been working well for them. So when Hicks returns, you know, and certainly he's going to have a lengthy rehab assignment in AAA, but how do they work him into that rotation?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. I've been real happy with what I've seen out of Hicks, both on both sides of the plate. I really have. I think Hicks has shown marked signs of improvement this year, maturing quickly, even since spring training. Hicks is a different player to me. He's. I don't know how you could replace him, is what I'm getting. I just don't know how you could replace him right now. With Buxton, seems injury prone. He seems overmatched. He seems overwhelmed. I'm just not sure that. And then where do you bat him in the lineup? I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff. So,
well, I think the concern here is that number one, Buxton was not being awesome up at the Major League Baseball level with the Twins. Really didn't have that taste of AAA. So I think there's definitely a rehab assignment coming. It's already the end of July, and the boys in Rochester play their last game, I believe, on the 7th of September. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see when Buxton, because I think he's just been cleared to swing a bat. So Eric, you're saying, talking baseball activities, he still could be weeks away, barely have enough time to get down to Rochester for a nice rehab stint.
Well, I thought baseball activities this weekend is what I saw.
Okay, so again, what does that mean, though? Is that, I don't know what that means as far as him returning, getting ready for a rehab stint. I think the Twins should continue to play this one with kid gloves, be a little bit cautious, and maybe their only plan should be to find a way to hopefully have Byron Buxton back up with the big league club in time to be added to a would-be postseason roster. And I wouldn't really shoot for anything more optimistic than that, because if the Twins do remain in the contention for one of these wild card spots, you at least want Buxton to be on the roster as a pinch runner or, you know, a defensive replacement late in the game.
Agreed. I think that's his role this year. I think that's more than any of us thought he would play, a bigger role than any of us thought he would play on the major league team in 2015. So to be even just talking about this the way we are is ahead of schedule.
Eric, do you have any thoughts on the sitch?
No, I mean, I don't know what you do. I mean, the Twins have the luxury of, you know, having Shane Robinson just be a guy. And you could part ways with him. But again, if Buxton is not going to be, you know, starting a rehab assignment until the beginning of August, then there's no real rush to get him back anytime before rosters expand. And at that point, you can, you know, have a bunch of outfielders on the roster. So it's going to really depend on what his rehab looks like, right? He'll have to hit his way back onto this team. And if he does that, there's any number of guys that he could come up for. They could even keep Robinson and still have Buxton there and work out some kind of rotation in the outfield. Dan Santana can play his way right off of this team. The Twins can still just move forward. They're going to have, you know, they have Eduardo Escobar and Eddie Nunez, who they seem perfectly fine getting Ed and Eddie in defense all the time, even putting them out there together. So I think Buxton, it's all going to be what can he do when he's healthy. And certainly his defense is there, but he needs to, you know, offensively get a little bit more confidence, and maybe that's what AAA will do for him. Maybe he'll get hot and he'll be tuned up and he'll force his way back onto this roster. But, Paul, like you said, the Twins have an opportunity to take this as slow as they need to go. So I think, you know, certainly 3 more weeks, I would say, before it's even realistic to see him back, I would guess.
You know, on the flip side, while we're talking about Buxton here, can we touch on Snow? Do you guys – so, I mean – The contrast is what I'm getting at here. The contrast between, we were talking a few weeks ago about the it factor, right? Like the cool factor, the wow factor. It's like there, the intangible. You know it when you see it. What I've seen out of Miguel Sano over the last 5 games, the walks that he's taken. He's been down 0-2 at least twice and drawn walks. The RBIs and the power may not be there right now, but I think we're going to look back in a few years, and I think we're going to do 2 things. Number one, we're going to make fun of him for tripping on this ball and missing like the only time probably. I mean, I just don't see him as – this is a fluke freak injury that I just don't think he's the kind of guy that's going to be on the DL a lot like Buxton seems to be. The other thing is, I mean, he's been put in the cleanup spot since the day he got to Minneapolis, and he hasn't left except for these 2 games here with the ball and the heel, the foot, whatever. Miguel Sano is the real deal, and Twins fans should be excited about this guy, and I'm very excited to see what he's going to do at third base. For those of you who haven't heard, Trevor Plouffe and his wife are having a baby, so he will be taking some sabbatical here shortly, probably at least 2 or 3 games, and Miguel Sano is going to be man in the hot corner at Target Field, potentially against the Yankees. So we're going to see a lot of Miguel Sano. Actually, you know what? The nation is going to see a lot of Miguel Sano this weekend. This Yankee series is going to be broadcast nationally on, I think, multiple different days. Just the draw itself, both games are Friday and Saturday are both sellouts. Saturday's a bobblehead day. This is a big weekend coming up for the Twins, and Miguel Sano can actually play a major part in it. Just general thoughts. I don't know.
I think you're right that these next 2 series, along with the 2 they just got through, are going to tell us a lot about this Twins team. You got, I believe, the division-leading New York Yankees, followed by a very, very good Pittsburgh Pirates team coming to town. And how they do over the next 6 games is going to tell you a lot, I think, about what this team has coming in the second half. If they're only to take a game from each of these next 2 teams and they start the second half losing 4 straight series, I mean – that 3-game lead that they have on that wild card spot is going to disappear real fast. Yeah. And with other teams in striking range, who I think are getting better as we go here, it could spell some trouble for these Minnesota Twins.
I think it's going to also determine what the Twins do at the trading deadline, and I think it's going to determine what they do with guys like Buxton and maybe Kepler and Berrios and guys like that. If they lose 2 out of 3 to the Yankees, and then, you know, it's only a 2-game series against Pittsburgh, but then they've got Felix Hernandez here coming. So, I mean, you know, if they go, you know, 4-6 or something like that, or 3-7 or something weird on this homestand, it completely flips the script on what the Twins are going to be looking to do. But I really want to stress that, you know, the other teams around baseball have taken notice of the Twins. If you, you know, I have MLB tickets. So like I have, you know, I got to all these out of market games. It's great. Changes your life. But I was watching the Yankees the last few days against the Orioles, and, multiple times the announcers are saying that I can't wait to get to Minneapolis and see what the Twins are about, and put it's a different team with Paul Molitor, and we want to see Sano, all these different things. So the Twins have caught the attention of fans around the league, and this weekend could be a pinnacle, either the top of the mountain or just a stop on the way to the summit.
Yeah, I mean, Miguel Sano has kind of done it all, and you know, Jay, you're absolutely right. He's shown a mastery of the strike zone. I mean, he's working walks. He's still striking out, but this is a guy that's, you know, he's swinging from his heels when he is swinging. But he's recognizing the pitches that he doesn't need to swing at, and that's been very comforting, right? So that kind of tells you that this is a guy that's comfortable up there, and so that swing and miss will go away as he, you know, learns to play within himself. You know, but certainly he's provided all of that wow factor that we didn't get with Buxton, and you know, we're going to see him play more defense here while Plouffe is out and find ways to get him into the ball game, but you know, he seems like he's here to stay, but, you know, you never know. Some of these guys, again, they could spend the next 2 weeks pulling a Kenny Vargas impression and just striking out all the time. But I think what he has shown us so far, at least with the walks, lets me know that this is a guy who gets it. He's got himself playing under control, and if he could just, you know, be a little bit better about picking which pitches he swings out of his shoes on, you're going to see things start to get a lot better. And then I think the other news that I want to touch on before we kind of look at the pitcher and hitter of the week is that Trevor May is rumored to be getting a start on the homestand. Is that true? You guys hearing that same thing?
I've heard a couple. I just heard a couple whispers just on the broadcast. They were talking about it a little bit today. He got 2 innings of work last night. Looked okay. I think he gave up a deep double to Pujols, but who hasn't? But given what we've seen out of Malone and Pelfrey, I think you could definitely see May get a start possibly in the Seattle series against his hometown team, who's he's done well against or at least faced a few times already, so that helps. It's not like the Pirates where he's totally, you know, going up there.
I haven't heard anything about this, and I think Pelfrey is set to open the Pirates series, so maybe that's the guy I would lean towards, but I don't really know who his spot he would take. Maybe they try to get Phil Hughes to break. I have no idea.
I think you could skip a Pelfrey start. I think if Pelfrey gets shelled or somebody gets, you know, Malone gets shelled on Sunday or something like that, I'm gonna make a call, and I'm gonna say sometime during the Seattle series, Trevor May will get a start.
It was at the end of the month, so
it's at the end of the a week from tomorrow, a week from Friday. You know, they're home for the Yankees, and then the Pirates are here for 2, and then the Mariners are here for the Friday or four. The
four games, yeah, Thursday through Sunday set.
Right. So that 4-game Thursday through Sunday, you could see I could see May start in one of those games.
All right. Well, we'll revisit this next week, Jay, and we'll put a helmet nacho on it if you're still ready to stand on that prediction.
All right.
All right, so let's talk then a little bit about the hitter and the pitcher of the week. So the Twins have now a full slate of games this week with the All-Star game all the way behind us. And we've had some pretty good performances. Jay, your favorite guy in the world, Joe Mauer, has had an absolutely fantastic week. And all these stats are going into today's game because I don't have a place that's updating my stats, you know, midday, but Joe Mauer going into today's afternoon game was hitting .389 with a .450 on base and .500 slugging in the past week. So, you know, you got to like what you're seeing out of him.
He had another double today, I believe, into the corner. But what I really want to stress about Joe is his defense. He's playing that line, those shots down the line. He's got it down. Being that right, you know, he's got that glove on the left hand. He's made multiple nice plays on balls over the bag. He's playing the bunt well. I continue to insist that he's the captain of that infield. Him and Dozier are usually in sync really well. But long and short, Joe's defense, while not gold glove caliber, I'm not lobbying for that. Joe's defense paired with his offense are noteworthy.
And I think that this week, despite the fact that Joe Mauer, I think, could compete for the hitter of the week any week with the performance he put in over the last 7 days, other than Shane Robinson, who has two hits
and
over
four
seven
plate appearances.
Yeah, there's no one else. Maybe Brian Dozier for that nice leadoff home run to start the second half. But there's really no one else in the running here. I mean, you get past Shane Robinson and Brian Dozier, we're looking at Danny Santana. Aaron Hicks has had a nice week with a couple of walks. But no one is really hitting outside of Joe Mauer right now. And we're seeing vintage Joe Mauer with the 3.45 average on base and slugging percentage there. And I don't know that there's anyone who's even close to that. So it's easy for me to say Joe Mauer for this week's Talk to Contact Hitter of the Week.
I'll second that.
Yeah, it's easy this week. When Joe Mauer is that good and the rest of the team is, you know, that bad. I mean, there's not even another regular that has an OBP above 300 except for Danny Santana. That was going into today, and he had himself a pretty terrible afternoon. So at that, OBP's down below 300 as well for the week. So, Joe Mauer in a landslide for us. And then on the pitching side of things, you know, I think it's a little bit more interesting on what this looks like. So in terms of just run prevention, Ervin Santana had a really, really nice week. So he had a couple of starts. He had 7 2/3 innings his last time out, and then he had 8 innings today, of no-run baseball. So, I mean, that's two excellent starts where you're pitching into the 8th inning in both of your starts. You know, that's pretty good. Phil Hughes had, a 7-inning start where he gave up, you know, 2 runs. So that's not terrible. But, I mean, this has been a team that's done a lot of good things. Ryan O'Rourke out of the bullpen in the last week has been pretty effective as well, and he's got a ton of strikeouts out there, you know. So I think there's some definitely a lot more candidates here with the pitching staff than there is with the hitters.
There may be a few more candidates, but I think there's only one clear winner. Ervin Santana is, for me, an easy choice. The way he pitched, particularly against the Angels today, the last day of the voting window, I guess you could call it, was the clincher. What he did against Trout, the way he handled Pujols, this is the guy that we thought we were getting. This is the ace. This is the number one. This is a true ace that I saw out there today. He pitched well again, well in Oakland. He's had a few good starts. I mean, I think he's had a tough luck loss or two, but overall, the last 4 to 6 starts or whatever it's been for Santana so far, I don't know if we've given it to him yet. I don't think would this be Ervin Santana's first pitcher of the week? Either way, he's got my vote. Ervin Santana.
Yeah, I think when you make two starts and give up no runs, it's an easy call for me. It doesn't matter what the rest of the guys do. Would have loved to see a few more strikeouts in his 15 2/3 innings. Only got 8 Ks, but just that one walk.
Hold on a second,
only 9 hits. So, a fantastic couple of outings.
He had one strikeout against the A's, and then he had like 7 or 8 today. So, the A's were putting bat to ball, but today, against the Angels, he did strike out like 7 or 8.
Yep, and so for me, once again, it's pretty easy to go Ervin Santana for the pitcher of the week.
All right, I'm on board as well. So 2 clean sweeps, Joe Mauer and Ervin Santana. Congratulations, you can collect your hardware at will call. We're going to take a quick break, put some Egons in your ears, and when we come back, we're going to talk beer, baseball, and the news from around the week. are back. I hope you enjoyed that selection
back
from
again.
Egon's Unicat.
I love that. Guess who's back? Guess who's back? Guess who's back?
We're back. It's us. We're the ones. So let's talk about beers. Gentlemen, I want to know what frosty beverage you're putting in your mouth this evening.
I'm going to go first tonight because I've got a good one, which is rare. So, you know, I know I've been kind of letting you guys down the past couple weeks, maybe even months, on my beer selections and stuff.
My whole life, right.
Yep. So I wanted to go out tonight and get something, you know, kind of different for me. It wound up not being so different, but I got.
Did you get a vodka and Mountain Dew?
No. I didn't do the Mountain Dew vodka tonight, but I did get a 12-pack of New Belgium Fat Tire. Slow ride, take it easy. It's the New Belgium Fat Tire Slow Ride Ale. It's got a picture of a pedicab on the label, which is interesting. But
is great if you like other people taking you places.
Right. And I thought Slow Ride is a good name for a beer, and it's also a good song. And I hadn't had this beer up until tonight, so that was my choice, the New Belgium Slow Ride from the Fat Tire line. I give it a 5 out of 5.
All right, that's pretty
five
good.
5 out of 5.
Pirate, what do you got?
I am drinking, once again for the second time in 2 weeks, an Arrogant Bastard Ale.
You from the son of a bitch.
Company out of San Diego.
That's the whale's vagina.
That is the whale's vagina. And my favorite part about living in California is channeling the governor every time I say California.
That will wear off, I'm positive.
I don't know that it will.
Do other people do that?
Nope.
Yeah, so it'll wear off.
But I do. Every time I see it on a license plate, I think to myself, California.
Jesus. It must just be a soundtrack running through your head.
It's so fantastic.
All right. Well, I this week I'm not drinking a beer because I'm deep in the throes of marathon training, and so I've got a 6-mile run I have to do before work tomorrow morning. But I am looking forward to drinking some beers this weekend, and I'm headed down to Mankato to visit the Mankato Brewery, going with Chuck Ruther and the gang from Vikings Journal, which is the hand egg part of the Twins Daily crew thing that they do over there. So I don't know what the football part of this event is, but for $5, I think I get a beer or something else at this Mankato Brewery event. And I'm a big fan of the Mankato Brewery. I think I've talked about it. I've had their Haymaker IPA before. They've also got the Mankato Original that they've got. That I've had on the podcast before. So it's a nice, decent beer, but I haven't ever been down to the brewery. So I'm excited to have an opportunity to go down there and get to ride a bus there and back. So it's like a free trip to Mankato. And Paul, we were just talking before we press record. It's like, if it's not already, it must be the start of Vikings training camp. And right across the street from Vikings training camp is one of, I would say, as a child, my favorite pizza restaurants in the whole world was Jake's Stadium Pizza.
Yeah.
And
fantastic.
For some reason, I remember Grandma and Grandpa would take us there, and I feel like they had a downstairs dining room. Does that sound like a thing? Or at least a very dark dining room? Like dark blue or something?
I don't think there was any sort of basement dining room. I remember it being dark, though, just poorly lit.
Yeah, but anyways, I remember the pizza being so good. Like, just like a sausage and cheese pizza. It was like super thin, lots of cheese. I remember it being like
squares.
Yeah, square pizza. And I remember it being really good. And then the last time I was in Mankato, I went over to Jake's Stadium Pizza. There's a new Jake's building. And it's a new dining place, and it's like one of those places now you go and you like order at the window and then you sit down and they bring the pizza over to you. So it's you don't feel like you're at like a real restaurant anymore. And the pizza was like thin and super greasy and not even an average pizza pie.
Oh my.
It was one of the most, and I think because my expectations were so high and I was telling Laura how great the pizza is, it was one of the most disappointing pizza experiences I've ever had.
That's quite a shame.
So, I don't know. I'm hoping to sneak back over there this weekend, and maybe that was just, I caught him on a bad day or something. So, I'll have
we
to check
only
it out
again.
Though. I mean, I'll just continue to go back and eat bad pizza, because...
When are you coming back, Eric?
I'm going on Saturday. I'm coming back on Saturday.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, I want to take this opportunity while we're talking about beer and breweries and such. The Northeast Brewers Block Party takes place in Minneapolis this weekend at Sociable Cider Works. I will be there along with my Red Current colleagues from work. So there's like 17,000 people confirmed going on Facebook. So even if it's half that number, that's still a pretty cool party. There's going to be music there from like 2 to 10. Sociable Cider Works in Northeast Minneapolis. Be there or be square. Eric, that means you.
Eric, and you're telling me that Vikings Journal is giving you a ride to Mankato in a bus, which I'm assuming there will be beverages on, and then a free beer in Mankato and a ride home for $5?
That's exactly what I'm telling you. For $5, somehow I got a ticket. Well, I had to buy Laura a ticket too, so $10. And then Chuck was like, well, we should just – Chuck sent me a message today and said, hey, we should just take the bus. And then Chuck said that – he won some kind of contest, and it's by winning this contest that the free bus ride is happening. So I think maybe you could have maybe you could have paid for the bus ride. There was some kind of scenario that you could have done that, but yeah. So essentially, for $10, we're getting a bus ride to and from a brewery that's 2 hours away.
That's a good deal.
Yeah. Plus, you know, many of the regular Twins Daily guys will be there, so I want it to just be like football, football, football. But because God, if I have to hear about Adrian Peterson contract negotiations, I don't know.
You won't have to hear about it.
I'll just have him pull the damn bus over, and I'll get off, and I'll walk back.
Yeah, doesn't he already have a contract?
That's what I was just gonna say. The contract is all taken care of, so don't worry about that.
Oh, good. I blocked the word Vikings from my Twitter feed, so I don't know anything that happens.
I block everyone who talks about Vikings in the offseason or the Timberwolves in general.
Well, that's good. So, yeah, so anyways, it'll be an opportunity for me to maybe learn about the Vikings, hear a little bit more about Vikings Journal, and get a free bus ride and talk some baseball. The one downside of riding the bus, though, is there is a Mankato Moondogs game happening on Saturday at home. And for $27, you can sit in the dog pound and get free ballpark food for the whole game, plus two beers. So $27 for a free buffet and two beers. And then after your two beers, it's only $1 a beer after that. So,
oh, man.
So the Moondogs, part of the Northwoods League, that summer college wood bat league, if you get a chance to go down there and see them, I would definitely recommend it. Some good talent comes through that league. So,
Paul, did you ever see the Riverbats when they were in St. Cloud?
Yes. I cannot comment on what happened on the field.
No, I'm just saying, same league.
For want
same.
Of cheap beers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to a Moondogs game, and the dollar beers are a bit like, when I went there, there's like dollar beers being dispensed by probably a local Minnesota State Mankato student straight from a keg for $1.
Nice.
It was fantastic. Thankfully, my uncle lives almost directly across the street from there, and I could stumble home. Fantastic. Definitely. Mankato Moondogs, if you're going to Mankato for Vikings training camp, definitely check out the Moondogs if they're in town while you're there.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, that wraps up the beer segment, and now it's time for us to talk about baseball news and go around the league. So the trade market's heating up. We mentioned it already. Scott Kazmir got dealt from the A's over to the Astros to kind of really kick things off on this trade market. And it's rumor season. So, I mean, I would say when you wake up, just go over to MLB Trade Rumors and, you know, see what's happened over during the 8 hours while you were asleep. Because from this point forward, up through the non-waiver trade deadline, guys are going to be moving across, back and forth across the country. Hug Watch is going to be on everywhere you look. And, you know, you never know who might be wearing a uniform of your hometown team, you know, when you wake up the next day.
Well, starting with the Astros, I think this really solidifies them as a serious contender to go deep into the postseason. When you have Keuchel and now Kazmir, both from the left side, that's powerful. Adding guys like McCullers, they've got a few other ones down there. Not even going to talk about the offense, which is strikeout prone but deadly. The Astros, you guys know I've been an advocate of. I kind of see them. I think they've moved ahead of the Twins a little bit, but I really like the Astros. I really like what they're doing down there. It's proof positive that a bad Major League Baseball team, through farm systems and drafting and scouting and trading, can go from the bottom, the pits of the American League, to a serious contender. They're drawing crowds down there. Which they haven't been doing for several years. That's encouraging to see that stadium fill up. I am on, if you know, as much as I'm pulling for the Twins and rooting for them to see them in October, I'm on the Astros bandwagon. I think this trade for Kazmir makes a lot of sense, especially when you look at what they gave up to get him. Astros are for real.
I would just like to say, for those of you who maybe forgot how awesome Joey Votto is, he leads all of Major League Baseball in hits since the All-Star break. He's got 14 hits in 7 games, including 2 home runs, 2 doubles, 8 walks, and only 4 strikeouts, and a stolen base. So those of you suffering through Cincinnati Reds games, Joey Votto is still somebody to watch. And, man, he's been electric lately, just – you know, vintage Joey Votto. And I think there are going to be a lot of parts leaving Cincinnati between now and the trade deadline, but Joey Votto will still be there for the long haul. And he, despite the fact that he's been around for a few years, he's still a piece that Red team can rebuild around.
His contract is crazy. I was watching this on MLB Ticket or TV the other night. The Reds, they were talking about Votto's contract. It goes through like 2023, something just insane. And he's making like $20 million every year. We didn't really realize the breadth and scope of the Votto contract when the Reds inked him last summer or 2 summers ago, when he signed the extension. But Votto's going to be in Cincinnati probably for life.
Yeah, he signed through 2024, which is going to be his age 40 season, and he's only currently in his age 31 season. So for another 9 years after this, making $20 million plus for every season.
Yeah, and when he's been a special player, but and he's been criticized a lot because, you know, I guess Reds fans or, you know, casual baseball fans just think that he only walks. You know, why doesn't he hit a double instead of taking a walk? But, you know, a similar type of thing, you know, that you heard a lot from Twins fans with Joe Mauer, right? He's gonna hit a single or he's going to walk. He's going to single or he's going to walk. Where's the power? And Votto is so much more than just that. So he's a very exciting player. The one thing I wanted to talk about, you know, we mentioned the Angels are off to this red hot start after the All-Star break. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. You know, but the Yankees are, you know, playing just as hot. They've won 4 straight. They're now 12 games over 500 in the American League East. They've got a 5.5-game lead over the Blue Jays, who are the only other team in the AL East that's above 500, and they're at 49-48, so just a game over. So that the Yankees are kind of starting to put things on cruise control. They're playing fantastic at home. They're 30-17 at home. So the Twins are lucky to get them on the road. They're playing just under 500 on the road, which will be nice for the Twins. The Twins are also a team that plays very good baseball at home this year, so it'll be nice for the Twins to come back home, hopefully get healthy against the Yankees, win 2 out of 3, have a couple more of those dance parties. But the Yankees are a team that I don't think a lot of folks picked to be contending this year, right? So they had all the drama with A-Rod. What's going to happen? He's going to come back. Is he an enigma or what? And he's kind of put a lot of that to bed so far this year. You know, the Red Sox were a team that everyone thought maybe could win. They're now 42-53. They've lost 7 games in a row. So, I mean, Boston fans just got to be just absolutely going crazy right now with this ball club. And the Orioles and Blue Jays are, you know, both underperforming, and the Rays are somehow just a game under 500. So there's a lot of mediocre teams out there, but the Yankees are kind of saying, hey, we have money to spend. They're probably going to make some type of move. I mean, not like they have a ton of prospects, but they'll do something to improve that team down the stretch. They're always a team that spends money. So they're turning into a team that could, you know, be someone to reckon with in the postseason.
When you look at Pineda, we talked about Pineda, Tanaka, the rotation's really coming together. I think the Yankees are the best team in the American League. I think it's very possible that they win a World Series this year. I think they will make a major move, possibly for Price or somebody very similar. I think they're going to make a huge splash. I think they smell certainly a division. So watch out for the Yankees, making this weekend series against the Twins all that more pivotal.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention around the league before we wrap things up this week?
Well, you know, the one guy that has and I didn't see what he did today, but you know, Clayton Kershaw, I know we've talked about him in this segment before, but Clayton Kershaw is just on another level. I saw parts of the game that he pitched against the Nationals on the road. He had like 16 strikeouts. I don't know if it's too early to be talking about Cy Youngs and stuff and such right now, but if we're going in that direction, I don't see anybody competing with Clayton Kershaw for a repeat Cy Young.
Well, nobody except maybe Zach Greinke right there on his own ball club, right? So Greinke's been red hot, but Kershaw has already got 174 strikeouts on the year, and he had a kind of a rough start to the season, but man, has he really turned it on lately. His 7-6 record belies how good he's actually been this year. I mean, his 2.68 ERA is down a long way from where it was earlier this season, and so he's absolutely getting better as temperatures heat up. So it's an exciting time. I mean, he's always been an exciting player, and he's, you know, always been that good. But I think it's you know, he's showcasing why he is one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in baseball.
Yep. And other than that, you know, that's about really all I wanted to talk about. We talked about Pujols' home run streak here. Pujols has really been hot. Some of the other premier power hitters around the league is what I was going to look at here. Nelson Cruz has a little bit of a resurgence here in the second half, climbing up that home run league leader category. Harper remains hot. I think when you're talking about real true power hitters, you know, the top five power hitters, I think it's got to be, you know, Harper, Trout, Cruz. Maybe you could argue about the next two, but those three guys are just pure home run power hitters. And it's been fun to see them hit them off the best too. I think Harper even had one off Kershaw last week. So maybe it was somebody else, But to see these guys launch these balls off some of the you know, it doesn't matter the count with these guys, it doesn't matter if they're down 0-2, it doesn't matter if there's runner on base or their team is behind. It's just fun to see some of these true, untainted, we should add, power hitters doing their thing this year.
Allegedly untainted.
Allegedly.
Innocent until proven guilty, gentlemen.
Bless your Barry Bonds.
Or Mike Piazza.
Or Rafi Palmeiro, definitely guilty.
Definitely guilty. All right, well, that's going to do it for us this week on the Talk to Contact podcast. Thanks for staying with us all the way through here. We appreciate you listening and tuning in every single week. And we'll talk to you in 7 more days when Jay decides if we're wagering a nacho on the next Trevor May starting appearance. I want to kiss an ashtray like
you. Stealing love through his boyfriend who is with Duke's boyfriend, who incidentally is in love with my ex-girlfriend, who consequently adores your same ex-boyfriend, so I think it's time.